Okay, we are on the air. I will start with the Shiloh that Aaron sent in. Aaron, you there? Yeah? No? I'll start with someone
else. Yeah, I'm here. I'll
start with the Shiloh. So Aaron sent in a Shiloh, which I've been busy with all day, which is like this. Are you allowed to go to a store and try on clothing? Are you allowed to go into a store and lay on a mattress and see if it's comfortable? With no intention to buy it from that store. You want to buy it online at a different store. There's another store that sells it for cheaper, for better deal. Are you allowed to go to store one? Are you allowed to go to store number one and try something on? Or
chime in.
What? You can chime in.
I think you could.
Nice.
Because I have a reason.
Yeah.
Because every store benefits from people showing interest in their products, whether they buy it or not. Because it's a scientific fact that when people show interest in a product, other people are drawn towards that product.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. So the question that is on hand, Bensi, hello. The question on hand is, can you go into a store, try things out, if you have no intention to buy from that store? So Zevi has a svara that stores like people coming in. That's true. They like people coming in, but they may not like people trying their stuff on and laying on the things. So I'm going to tell you, sorry, Zevi, I do believe it is not allowed because you're wearing someone's thing. You are laying on someone's bed. Now, if you go in and ask them permission, hello, sir, can I try on your thing? I have no intention to buy it because I'm going to buy it from other store a lot cheaper or online a lot cheaper, but I want to try it on anyway. And they say, you know what? No problem. We like you here because it's a scientific fact. That's fine. But for you to go ahead and just do it, that would be a form of thievery and not allowed. Okay, another question that was sent in was, if you are in a store and you see the prices are higher in this store than the one down the block, and you see someone's about to buy something, someone's about to buy a can of Coke for $2, and you know down the store, the same can of Coke, it's cold, everything's the same down the block. It's for $1. Are you allowed to tell this person, hey, don't buy it in this store. You could buy it down the block for $1. So it's a great question. Hello, Yoni. The question like this. So not only are you allowed to tell him not to buy from the store, but you may be obligated to, because perhaps it falls under the umbrella of Ashavas Aveda, meaning this person is about to spend $10 on something, which down the block he could get for $8. The same thing down the block. So it would be in a different city or online. That's not fair. That's not comparable because it has to be available right now, right here. But if right down the block, he can get the same article for cheaper. So he's about to lose that $2 extra. So by you telling him, you're doing a Shavas Aveda because he's about to throw $2 out of his pocket for no reason. So you go ahead and tell him you'll be doing perhaps a mitzvah of a Shavas Aveda. So therefore, you should tell him. Now, if there are differences, if this is better than that, then there's no reason to say anything because then it's not the Shabbos Aveda. But if it's exactly the same, then you should say something. And the last question I was sent in was, plastic items that are fleishik, that are milchik, can you switch? How does it work? So plastic is a material which we hold absorbs and you can't get it out of it. And therefore, if you put in a hot fleishik into a plastic, the thing is fleishik forever and can never become unfleishik. You can't kash it, you can't change it. Same thing milchik. If you put a hot milchik in a plastic thing, that stays milchik forever. And therefore, you should keep plastic separate. This is my milchik plastic, my fleishik plastic, and treat it as such. Okay, let's move on to our regularly scheduled program. Here we go, Hilchos Shabbos. Okay, the plan for today, we'll try to go through Chelek Gimel of Mishnah Berurah. Chelek Gimel of Mishnah Berurah discusses all of Hilchos Shabbos. So it's a lot there. I want to divide it up into three parts. Okay, Hilchos Shabbos divided into three parts. Part number one, we're going to call the mitzvahs of Shabbos. Part number two is the Isurei Derabbanan. The certain things that Rabbanan said we can't do on Shabbos. And part three will be the Malachas Deraisa, the Lamentes Malachas of Shabbos. So try and do a little bit, cliff note version, a run through all three parts, just as a way of broadening our knowledge and then determining where we should park ourselves and go through deeply and thoroughly at a later date. Okay, so part one, the mitzvahs of Shabbos. So the mitzvahs of Shabbos really start Erev Shabbos. You have a mitzvah to buy things nice for Shabbos, clean up your house for Shabbos. That's when Shabbos starts. Some hold the whole week. You should have your eyes out and doing this for Shabbos. But at least everyone should do one special thing for Shabbos. As a side note, Shnai Mikra is something which should be done. Shnai Mikra means going over the parsha twice with the Pesukim and once with Rashi or Unkelis. That also should be done. That can be done the whole week as well. And then the last thing, as far as Erev Shabbos goes, to not have a Suda or start any major work around 3 hours before Shabbos. So meaning no washing or starting a job within 3 hours before Shabbos. Do it earlier. You can snack, no problem. You can do little things, little tasks around the house. But to do work within 3 hours of Shabbos should not be done. Okay, now moving on. Halakhas Neros. Okay, so now it's time to light candles. The earliest time to light candles is Plag HaMincha. Plag HaMincha is around an hour and a quarter before Shabbos. Yeah, it changes loosely, but it's around an hour and a quarter before Shabbos. That's the earliest time you can light candles. The latest time to light candles is Shkia, sunset. And don't go that close, but that's the latest time to light candles. Now, if you want the lady lights candles, Shabbos has started for her. It's Shabbos. When a man lights candles, he was not Makabal Shabbos until davening. When a lady lights candles, it's assumed Kabbalah Shabbos. Now, she can make a Tanai, a condition that says, I'm lighting candles, but I don't want to be Makabal Shabbos. That's fine. So people do that by the Kosel, for example. They want to light candles at home and then take a taxi to the Kosel. That's fine. You just need to stipulate, I'm lighting candles and I'm not being Makabal Shabbos. So that is Halakhas Neros. When you light in a room that has electricity, you run into an issue that those candles are pointless because they're not adding anything to the room. So what's highly recommended is turning the lights off of that room and then turn them on the Kavod Shabbos and light. Go straight from turning the lights on and lighting the candles, and the bracha will go back on both. So you're having a dark room, you're turning the lights on the Kavod Shabbos, light your candles, bracha lehalin Shabbos kodesh, and have in mind all of the lights, including the electricity. Okay, moving on to Kiddush. In Kiddush, you are not allowed to eat anything or drink anything, even water, before Kiddush. Now, this applies to men and women alike. There's no difference. And right when sunset starts, right when Shabbos starts, you cannot eat or drink anything. And by the day, same thing. Before davening, there's no chiluv Kiddush yet. And therefore, you can eat or drink whatever you're allowed to do before davening, you're allowed to do also. But once you've davened Shachar Shmona Esrei, if you're a man or a woman, once you have done some sort of bakasha, some sort of request to Hashem, you now have a chiluv Kiddush. And therefore, you can no longer eat or drink anything before Kiddush. Now, Kiddush has to be made, and immediately after making Kiddush, you need to have a suda. Now, a suda for here could mean mizonos, cake, cookies, or bread. But if you make Kiddush and then just have some candy or herring, that's not good Kiddush. You're not yotzi your Kiddush. In order to be yotzi Kiddush, you need to have what's called Kiddush Makom Suda. Now, and with that, you can use mizonos for. Now, it's not going to work for your chiv of suda for Shabbos. You need to have lacha mishnah, which we'll see in a second. But as far as Kiddush is concerned, you need to have the Kiddush b'makom the suda. Now, once you have a chiv of Kiddush, we spoke out, you can't even have water or coffee. Before davening, there's no chiv of Kiddush. So you can have your water, you can have your coffee. But once you've davened, shachris, you now have a chiv of Kiddush, you can no longer have anything, not even water or coffee, once the chiv of Kiddush has come. Now, moving on, we have the halachas of the suda. So, Jay, you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush. After davening, you can't eat anything. Zero. However, before you daven, then you have the rules of what you're allowed to eat before davening. So before davening, you're really also not supposed to eat just what you need for davening. So if you need that water or coffee before you daven in order to get you through davening, that's fine. A little bit of mizonos, if you need it for davening, then it's mutter. If not, then it's usser. But after Kiddush, I'm sorry, after davening, you can't have anything, not even a little bit of mizonos.
I meant for Kiddush B'Makom Suda on Saturday,
which is Durabunin, it's a little more maker. Can you just have a bite of Mizonos? That's not enough for
Kizrakum Suda. No, you need to have Kizrakum Suda means that you're having a kazayas of Mizonos. That's
enough to require an afterbracha.
Yes. Yes, that is a minimum to have it. So now, if you have your coffee in shul, Josh, you can drink it up until Shmona Esrei. But after Shmona Esrei, you can no longer drink until you have Kiddush. Okay, moving on. Lechem Mishnah. On Shabbos, there's a chiyuv to have three sudas. All three sudas need to have Lechem Mishnah. There are those that are lenient by Shabbos Shudas not to have Lechem Mishnah. It's okay. Some hold your yotzi with Mizonos. That's okay. But ideally, you would want to have Lechem Mishnah by all three of your sudas on Shabbos. Now, Lechem Mishnah means two loaves of bread that are shalem, that are complete. Sometimes you'll see that there's some little bits of pieces missing here and there. If it's recognizably missing, then it's not good. If it's not recognizably missing, it's a little bit, maybe it's even a crust that peeled off, but it's not recognizable. It looks like a shalem. If it looks like a shalem, then it is a shalem. Now, in benching, you're supposed to say ritzei. If you forget ritzei in the first two meals, you have to repeat benching. Both men and women have to repeat benching if they forget ritzei in the first two meals. If, however, you forget ritzei in Shabbos Shudas, you do not need to repeat benching. Okay, Havdalah. Havdalah, once you have benched from Shabbos Shudas, you can no longer eat until you make Havdalah on a cup of wine. Havdalah ala kais. If your Shabbos Shudas is going late, that's no problem. But once you've benched, so now you can no longer eat until you make Havdalah. As far as doing Malacha goes, as long as you say Baruch HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol, or in Shmona Esrei, you said Atochan Antanu, and it's after three stars, so then you can do Malacha. You can make a phone call, you can drive home. As long as you say Baruch HaMavdil or Atochan Antanu, and it's after three stars. But you still can't eat. The only heter to eat, once you've benched on Shudas, is making Havdalah ala kais. Ideally, Havdalah should be made on wine or grape juice. If you cannot drink it or do not have it, you can make Havdalah on coffee or beer. Just if you do that, make sure you do not make Hagafen, make sure you make a Shehakel. But as far as Havdalah is concerned, that is a fine Havdalah. And the last part of our mitzvah will be Malava Malka, that after Havdalah, sometimes in the night, there is a mitzvah to have Malava Malka. Ideally, you would want to have bread, your yotze with mezainis as well. And it's a good idea for everyone to have a Malava Malka. Okay, that is a wrap on part one of mitzvahs, we'll call them, of Shabbos. Now, moving on to the Isuri Durabanan. So the first Isuri Durabanan, which is a chiddush, is telling Goyim to do things for you on Shabbos. So as a general rule, you're not allowed to tell a Goy to do something that you cannot do yourself. Now, the only hatayim here are twofold. If you hint to them, which that alone is not mutter, but that starts the ball rolling. That if you hint to them, hello, Shui. If you hint to them, so Shui, we are now discussing Hilchos Shabbos. We're starting part two, which is, I'll send the video, the audio for the part one, don't worry. Part two is the Issur D'Rabbanan of telling Goyim to do things. In order to make a mutter, to tell a guy something, it has to be done only hinting to them, and important, you're not allowed to benefit, even if you hint to them. You can't benefit from what they did unless there is a real need for Shabbos. It's a mitzvah, like air conditioning in the shul, lights in your dining room. It has to be something which is important and a mitzvah for Shabbos. But let's just say you want your light on in your living room so you could read Mishpacha magazine. That's not considered a mitzvah, sorry. And therefore, I love Mishpacha. Tell someone you know that I like Mishpacha. You're not allowed to tell them to turn the light on. And if the guy comes in and says, oh, I'm going to turn on the light for you in your living room, you have to leave your living room. So you're not allowed to benefit from it. So you need two things that you hinted to them.
What happens if you offer him to read something in your living room for a half a second?
Listen, if it's a joke, it doesn't count. If it's that he needs it also, like he's your live-in maid and your live-in maid also wants to read, then it's okay. But...
And you just say like, hey, check out this interesting article I have here just so that he has benefit. Does that work?
That's a good question. Right, it's a good question, but it has to be done. In order for the guy to do something for you and for it to be mutter from doing something for you, it has to be that it is hinted to him and either he's benefiting from it or it's a tzarech mitzvah for you. Okay, the next is the Derabbanan of Shabbos is Muksa. Muksa is huge. We're not going to do everything, of course. We're going to touch upon it. But Muksa in general, the Muksa, it's not also to touch Muksa. It is also to move Muksa. So if you have something which is Muksa, you can touch it. You're not going to get anything from it, but you can touch it. You just can't move it. Second of all, you can't move it with your hands. If you want to move it with your foot, it's fine. With your elbow, it's okay. And therefore, if you have something left on the table, left on the counter, that you just want to get rid of, you left money, you left your phone, so you can move it with your elbow or preferably your foot, that's not a problem of muksa. Now, there are different levels of muksa. Some muksa allows you to pick it up and put it away if it's in your way. Some muksa doesn't. That we're going to have to learn better, more thoroughly. But for money, rocks, these things have no use at all. So those things you wouldn't be allowed to move even though you need this place. So you'd have to kick it with your foot. Whereas, let's say a phone or hammers or things like that, they have other uses, so that you'll be allowed to pick up and move it if it's in your way, if it's in the place. Now, once you've picked up muksa, as a general rule, there are exceptions, but as a general rule, once you've picked up muksa by accident, you don't need to drop it. Once it's in your hand, you can then, oh, yeah, bye, continue to put it wherever it needs to go. There are some exceptions to the rule, but as a general rule, once it's in your hand, you can continue putting it wherever it goes.
Okay. Rabbi,
yeah.
In terms of moving it with your foot, are we always like lenient with that? Like if there's ever a sharp object on the ground or whatever it is, you don't have to think twice with your foot, just you can always move it?
Like this. If the sharp object on the ground, you may cut your foot if you actually move with your foot. If it's a sharp object and it's deemed dangerous, you're allowed to pick it up anyway to save people from harm. But let's just say it's something which you don't want there and it is muksa that you can move with your foot. But don't make a mistake. Muksa means moving objects. Muksa doesn't mean turning a light on. You can't turn a light on with your foot. That's not allowed. We're only just specifically talking about the isidur abanan of moving objects. That's which could be done with your foot. But again, if it's dangerous, pick it up with your hand and put it away and no one should get hurt. Now, another part.
What's the definition of muksa? I mean, I know there's different categories, but how are you defining it?
In general, muksa is something which has no mutter use on Shabbos. A very general definition. Objects, things, kelim, that don't have a mutter use or its primary use is not mutter. For example, a phone is muksa. However, if you want to set your alarm and have that be your alarm for Shabbos, then it's okay. It's not muksa. But if you didn't do that, so then it's muksa, right? As Zevi's saying, muksa, the definition of muksa is set aside. That's what muksa is because it doesn't have a real mutter use on Shabbos. That's a general. Like tefillin don't have a mutter use on Shabbos, tefillin on muksa, money, muksa. But things which have a primary use on Shabbos, that's not muksa. Okay, moving on to another issur derabbanan of Shabbos is refuah, medicinal things. So anyone who is sick, anyone who is dying, hello Yecheskel, anyone who is dying can do whatever they need. We're only now discussing people, the issur derabbanan of refuah is only healthy, generally healthy people that are not feeling so well. They have headaches, they have ailments, they want to take medicine to make them feel better. So here we have an issur derabbanan, because we're nervous you're going to go ahead and do averas, like grinding medicine, and therefore you're not allowed to take certain medicines. However, there are many exceptions to this rule. Antibiotics you can take. If you have a headache, you cannot take medicine. However, if your headache or ailments are so severe, it's going to make you lay down in bed, so then you are allowed to take medicine. It's only if you're able to function, just a little bit uncomfortable, then you cannot take the medicine. A sleeping pill is allowed. Now you can take medicine. That's not considered sickness. That's not considered medicine. So you can take sleeping pills. Okay? Other Yisuri Derabanan, we discussed in our Bishul Shir, other Yisuri Derabanan are doing things which look like cooking, for example. Even if it's fully cooked, you can't put it on the fire. It looks like cooking. Or if you have a fire going, we're afraid that maybe you're going to go ahead and stroke the coals. Those are other Yisuri Derabbanan of Shabbos, and we discussed you need to prevent doing them. Okay, that ends part two of the Yisuri Derabbanan of Shabbos. So we did part one, all the mitzvahs, kiddush, etc., candles. Part two was the Yisuri Derabbanan. Now moving on to part three. Part three is the Issur D'oraisas, the malachas. So there are lamentes malachas learned out from the Mishkan. And we're not going to go through all lamentes malachas now, but we're going to do a sampling, just like, you know, bring out certain lamentes malachas. Next week in Mishnah, we're going to focus on chitzah. Chitzah means carrying, erev, what that means. We're going to go through that next week in Mishnah a little bit. But so we'll skip over Hitzah. But just a sampling of other malachas. For example, you want to make a tie on Shabbos. There's a malacha deraisa of tying, kosher. You want to untie a tie. There's a malacha deraisa of matir, untying. So it could be a problem. However, if you're doing it, we'll call it same day service, meaning you're going to tie the tie or untie the tie from the same day, that's fine. But if you're the type of person that ties his tie once and keeps it like that for the next 7 months, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. That's a real significant tying. Also, let's say you broke a chair and you want to put it back together. Your table broke, your door broke, your stroller broke. Something broke and you want to put it back together. That could be a problem of binyan, that could be a problem of makav patish. Fixing things is a problem with Shabbos. However, if the fixing is a temporary fixing, it's not going to last, right? It goes in and out very easily. The wheel of the stroller keeps coming on and off, on and off. The door of the handle, the handle of the door goes on and off. That's not a problem with fixing it because you didn't really fix anything. You put it back the way it was, which is going to break again in another hour or a day. So those things are not considered significant fixing, and that would be fine. Schita. Schita is wringing things out, squeezing things. You're not allowed to make orange juice or lemonade on Shabbos. That's schita. Also, if you have a major spill, a lot of liquid, water fell on the floor, you cannot take a towel and just start cleaning that up because that will lead to schita of wringing out the rag. So what you should do in such cases, you place it on and wait and then pick it up carefully and put it aside and do it with another towel. Now, good question, can you squeeze lemon into a drink? No. You can squeeze lemon onto your fish. You cannot squeeze lemon into a drink. Tricky questions, but we'll go into the schita another time. But again, opening your eyes up, that could be a problem on Shabbos of schita. Borer, selecting things, means you have a real mixture. Now, a real mixture doesn't mean in the refrigerator, there's a mixture. That's not a mixture. Those are separate entities. They're not really mixed. But let's say you have on the bowl different salads or different things, and there's a mixture, and you want to pull out certain things. So the rule is, to make it very short, and there are exceptions, but the rule is, if you want to pull out the good from the bad for immediate use with your hands, that's fine. But if it's not the good from the bad, you're taking out the bad stuff, or using a special kli for that, or you're doing it for something 3 hours from now, that's not allowed. Okay, that's a general look at borer. You're not allowed to sort things. When you're playing a game, playing Monopoly, you cannot sort your money. You cannot make piles of 10s, 20s, 50s, 100s. You can't do that. That's sorting. But what you can do is if you have the mixture, you can pull out the $100 money, whatever, and that you can use because you're pulling out the good from the bad with your hand for immediate use. That would be fine. Other things like tolish. Tolish means you are detaching things which are growing. So obviously you can't go ahead to the tree and pluck off that lemon, but that applies also to skin and to fingernails. You're not allowed to pull off loose skin or fingernails, that would also be a problem. As far as resetting a chessboard, it's a great question. If you have a whole mix of the pieces, so now if you want to reset it for a game in 2 hours from now, absolutely not. But if you want to play now, so every piece that you pull out, you're putting it where you want it for now, that would be good. That's called taking good from the bad for immediate use with your hand. That would be fine. You cannot bite the skin off your lip. You cannot do that. It's a derabanan, not deraisa, but it's a derabanan. You cannot do that. If it falls off, it falls off. But you cannot go ahead and pick off loose skin. Okay, ripping. If you have a package of things, you're allowed to destructively rip open that package. Even though korea ripping, other forms of ripping, like ripping toilet paper, that you can't do. Because ripping toilet paper is constructive. Ripping bags would be destructive. Okay, again, these are a touching of the lamentas malachas. And the mission one day we'll go through them better. But just open your eyes up. Many things are usher, but if you know the rules, you could do them in a mutter way. And the mission we will continue with this. And the last thing is, as far as children cannot be a Shabbos guy. And you can't use them. Oh, turn the light on. Oh, I want that on. They have to keep Shabbos, just like you have to keep Shabbos. And you're commanded to make sure they keep Shabbos. However, having said that, if the light is off, you really want it on. So you cannot go over, oh, Yankala, turn the light on. You cannot go over, put his hand right by the socket or by the switch. What you can do is put him nearby, and if he turns it on, okay, you don't need to stop him. But you can't tell him or put him in a situation where you know for sure he's going to do it. But if he's going to do something which you're happy with, then you don't need to stop him from doing it. Okay, that is a loose sampling of Chelek Gimel, Mishnah Berurah. And now we want to some other things like bitachon. So we learned last few weeks in Shah Bitachon, Chovas Avavas, the psicha, that you are, it's a great idea to believe in Hashem for a parnasa, for things that you'll be less dependent on people. You have a happier life. And if you don't do that, then Hashem will remove his hashkacha from you, perhaps. This week, something else in the psicha of Chovas Avavas, he says that if you really have bitachon Hashem, so then you will not care so much about other mundane things, and you'll be able to focus more on the important things. And his lesson is, if you're talking to Hashem, you'll be meisiach das min yanei olam hazeh. You'll be able to forget other things that are going on in this world, and you'll be able to focus on avodas Hashem, because you realize it doesn't really matter so much to you. But I heard that there's an election count in America. Now, it's very interesting. It doesn't really matter so much. At the end of the day, if you have bitachon Hashem, of course, we all want this guy, we want that guy, it's true, and you can follow it, but it doesn't really matter so much. Our bitachon is supposed to be in Hashem, and if you realize that, you'll be able to detach yourself. It's not so important. Like, whatever happens, cool, we'll wait and see, but it's not that important. That's one mile of bitachon, he says. Another one is, if you have bitachon Hashem, so even if a certain avenue of parnasa got closed for you, you realize that Hashem has many, many avenues, many ways of giving you what you need. If, however, you're lacking the bitachon and a certain job fell through, a certain thing didn't work for you, you're going to get all up in arms. Oh, no, what am I going to do? But if you realize, listen, even if I had that job, the money was coming straight from Hashem. So you realize, okay, that job didn't work. Hashem has many other ways of getting it to you. You'll be more ragua, more at ease. These are certain points that he brings out, again, in the psicha of Chovas HaLevavos. Moving on to tefillah, as far as Benzi asks, you're allowed to rip for food, meaning you're allowed to do destructive ripping or nothing that's going to create a container. But you can rip open things that you need for Shabbos, but try not to rip the letters as you do that. Okay, back to tefillah. So I want to focus a little bit on the bracha, Berachas HaTorah. So we dive in Berachas HaTorah for Anachnu v'Tzetzo'enu. So what does Anachnu and Tzetzo'enu mean? Literally means us and our children, our descendants. Whether or not you are married, whether or not you have children yet, we all will, those who don't. The idea is that what you're dialing for is that they should learn Torah and know Torah, you yourself and your children. And the Mishnah Berurah connects this very interestingly to Unuval Tzion. Unuval Tzion, towards the end, we say, Leman lo niga larik, velo neli la behala, which the article translates that we should not struggle in vain or produce for futility. So the Mishnah Berurah says, there's a link between those two tefillahs. We're downing that we should learn Torah and know Torah. And that's what it means, lo nele la bahala, that we shouldn't produce for futility. Because if your children are not productive, if you and your children are not learning Torah and don't know Torah, that's what's called futility. And the Mishnah Berurah is saying that you're having these in mind, both these tefillahs you're having in mind, Hashem shall help you and your children to use their time wisely to know Torah and be able to learn. And that's a connection that the Mishnah Berurah makes. All right, now I'll end off with a vart on the Parsha. This is Parsha Vayera. So I'll say over two things. My favorite vart from the Satmar Rebbe. He asked like this, Avraham Avinu davened to save Sodom and all the cities. With, I mean, tremendous chesed, he cared about all the tzaddikim, and even if it meant their Sham getting saved, that was fine, because we got to save the tzaddikim. So then he was dying to save the Sedaim. And it didn't work because there weren't 10 people, actually. It didn't work because there weren't 10 people there. Why didn't Avraham Avinu just get up and move down to Sedaim with his yeshiva, right? And then Sedaim would have 10 tzaddikim, and Hashem would save the city. Why wouldn't he? Obviously cared enough about them to save them, so that would be a way of saving them. Then there would be 10 in the city. So Sam Rebbe says, to daven for people, you have to daven for everyone. Daven for tzaddikim, daven for Hashem, daven for everybody. But to live with them, chas v'shal. And what he's pointing out is that even though we care about everyone in Klal Yisrael, we care about everyone in the world, but you can't do anything that's going to be damaging to yourself. You can't put yourself in a situation that may not have a good influence on you. And therefore, daven for Sodom, but don't live in Sodom. And one last part from the Ramban. At the end of the parasha, we have the Akedah. The pasuk says that Hashem tested Avraham Avinu. Right, Halakim Nisa es Avraham. So, what's it called? So, Here is what the Ramban says. Hashem knows if you're going to do good or not do good. So why was Hashem testing Avraham Avinu? So he says that there's a difference whether or not you'll be successful with your heart or to actually bring it out. So the testing was to be able to bring out these capabilities that Avraham Avinu had. It wasn't like for fun, like in the laboratory doing tests. Oh, let me see if Avraham Avinu will do this. It was to be able to bring out this koyach and Avraham. He had this potential, and I'll bring it out. And then he adds one thing, which is crucial for us to know. Hashem, the Ramban says, Hashem does not test Rishayim. If Hashem knows you're not going to succeed, he's not going to test you. He only tests people that he knows have the chance of succeeding. And his lesson is, they're not going to listen, so he's not going to test them. Only the tzaddikim, because he knows the tzaddikim can be matzik the ben yisrael. He knows the tzaddikim will be able to succeed. Now, it doesn't mean they will, but it means they can. And thereby, it's something crucial for us. Whenever we're going through something hard, something tough, Hashem's testing us. But if you're being tested, it's only because Hashem knows you can do it. Hashem's not going to test you to set you up for failure. It's only because he knows you can. So no matter what you're going through, you have to know you can do it. And otherwise, Hashem will not be testing you. All right, that's a wrap. I miss Hashem next week, Chelik Dalet, Mishavua, to get a general idea of Chitzah. Have a very good Shabbos.